Two summers ago, stargazers around the world were stunned by sharp images of Pluto beamed back by a NASA probe. Scientists got a highly detailed list of what the dwarf planet is actually made of. My next guest spent decades, along with his team, developing the imaging spectrometer that flew by Pluto. For his work, Dennis Reuter is a finalist in this year's Service to America Medals program, and he joins me now. Dennis, great to have you on.
Very nice to be here. Very excited to talk about this topic.
First of all, just as a basic question, how long did it take for this device to get from Earth to where it could take pictures of Pluto like this?
Well, we launched January 19th of 2006, and we were close enough to start to take pictures of Pluto in kind of the April-May 2015 timeframe.
So that's
almost 9.5 years.
Yeah, and so I guess the big worry then is how does the machine stay ready and operational through that long journey in space?
That's exactly right. And what we did was, during that long journey in space, we actually did a fair amount of practicing. We took data on stars to give us calibration, and we practiced the observations that we were going to do at Pluto because we had one chance. We were going by Pluto, and we wanted to be sure that we got all the data we possibly could when we went by Pluto. So we wanted to make sure that everything on the spacecraft was working as we expected and that all our plans were well coordinated.
So let's back up in time here and tell us an idea of how long it took to develop this probe and how you and your team went about this whole work in the first place.
It's very interesting. We weren't the very first people involved, but we started in around 1993 to sort of give you an idea of how long it takes something like this to occur. The principal investigator, Alan Stern, had actually been working on the idea a few years earlier than that, but we developed a technology that was very relevant to taking data at Pluto. One of the problems with deep space missions like Pluto is that Pluto is roughly 33 times further away from the sun than the Earth is. So you can imagine it's going to take, 9.5 years to get there if you go as fast as you can. And so the way you do that is to make a very light spacecraft. And since we needed to make light instruments, we wanted to make ours a very light yet capable instrument. So we developed with other folks a technology that was very good at taking spectra, infrared spectra, spectra that you can't see with your eyes, but tell you a lot about what's on the surface of the planet, but in a very small volume with a very small mass.
I guess one of the problems must have been, or one of your challenges would be, as microelectronics keep getting lighter and more capable, that is, more capability packed into a tiny package with each successive generation of chip, how do you know when you're there?
We never finish. In fact, I'm involved with a mission to take a sample from an asteroid, OSIRIS-REx, which will launch in September of this year. And we have a version of the same type of spectrometer that went to Pluto, but it's got an array that's 16 times larger. And it's over a much longer wavelength, and as technology advances, we'll make more capable instrumentation that's smaller. And that's part of the joy of being involved with this, and the challenge too is that we're always trying to push as far as we can using what we have. Now, on the other hand, we can't use the most advanced technology because space is a pretty unforgiving environment. It's cold, there's no air, it's a vacuum, and there's a lot more radiation from the sun and from gamma rays, from cosmic rays, and all that sort of stuff. So you have to make sure that the things you have can stand those conditions, and that generally is not the most advanced instrumentation. So it's a balance between what gives you the best results and what's most likely going to last the time that you need it to last.
We're speaking with Dennis Reuter. He's a staff scientist at NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center and a 2016 SAMMY's finalist. And one of the citations for you in the SAMMY's finalist information is your ability to form a good team and to sustain the leadership needed for a project over this many years. So in working on a project for 20 years, how do you keep the team motivated, keep it together, and also make sure the funding in the interest of the higher-ups stays there for you?
It's a balancing act. One, keeping the team excited. We at NASA, this is what we like to do. We like to learn about our solar system, how it formed, how it's evolving, what's going on now. So people are very excited about the results that we were getting. I mean, it is sort of defined delayed gratification to launch in 2006 and get there in 2015. But we always knew that we were going to get an exciting payback, and Pluto helped. So it's the people here who, it makes it easy to have a team when you have great people, is what I'm trying to say. And the people I've worked with here uniformly been just great people. We like to get things done, so that helps. And then the making sure that funding is maintained. Well, we try to estimate what we think it will take, and we try to be as frugal as possible. But we have good cooperation with the management here because they also understand that it takes a while to get these exciting data. And we have good cooperation with our partners in the outside world, Southwest Research, which was the PI institution for New Horizons, has always been very supportive of our work. So it's having good people around that really makes things work well.
Now, is this something for you that dates to childhood, this interest in celestial matters?
I was always interested in being a scientist, and then, well, this will give a clue to my age, but when I was growing up was when we were starting to do the manned space program, and watching the Gemini's launch and the Apollo's launch and the Mercury's even launch, it just really got me excited because here's an activity that the United States is doing that's obviously very beneficial to the country, but on the other hand, it's also providing information and technology advances for the whole world. So it seemed like a very, very nice way to satisfy my technical urges, but also be helpful. And so, I got interested in it fairly early on.
And just for the technically minded, give us an idea of the size of the probe, of the spectrometer, I should say, that's on the probe. How big is it? How much does it weigh? What does it generally look like?
It's interesting. I'm looking at a model of it right now in my office. It's about 2 feet long and its longest dimension, and about a foot high and about another foot and a half in the other dimension. And it weighs about 10 kilograms. But in it, it has not only the infrared spectrometer we made, and the infrared spectrometer is just a piece of filter material, which is made of a lot of layers of different materials deposited on a sapphire, 1 centimeter squared piece of sapphire, and that put over an array. That part of it only weighs 100 grams or so. The whole instrument, though, also has a visible imager, which is what we use to take the color images of Pluto. And so having an instrument that can take spectra and images over a 5-degree range and yet weighs only 10 kilograms and uses only about 8 watts of power was something that was really, really helpful for the Pluto mission.
And how long does it take for the data from the instrument to get back from Pluto?
Of course, the speed of light from Pluto is 4 hours. But the thing that limits it is, as farther away you go, the signal that you send out spreads out over a bigger area. So whatever gets to an antenna on the ground is decreasing as the distance squared. And so from Pluto, we're only getting back about 1,000 or 2,000 bits per second worth of data, which is the internet.
That's slow, yeah.
Yeah, it's slow. So it takes a long time to get the data down. Now, we've gotten most of it down, but it took several months before we could start getting the very high-resolution data from Pluto.
And after Pluto, where did this whole apparatus go, and where do you think it is now?
It's a bit beyond Pluto, but what we just recently had happen, which is very exciting, is that we had put in for an extended mission to use the spacecraft to examine another Kuiper Belt object, like Pluto is, called MU69, and we'll get there in 2019, and that mission was just approved. So we are now working on planning the observations and getting ready for that encounter, which will happen in roughly 2.5 years.
Do you feel like a little bit of yourself is out there in space forever and ever?
Exactly right. I kind of think of of it. When you look at the pyramids and you think, my goodness, those have existed for thousands of years, and the people who built them, you know, that's sort of their legacy. Well, this is something that's going on just forever, sort of, and it does feel like I'm connected to it.
Dennis Reuter is a staff scientist at NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center and a 2016 SAMMY's finalist. Thanks so much for joining me.
I'm very, very happy to talk about it, and I'm very happy to talk about the work that was being done. I think that people were very excited about the mission. People came up to me afterwards and were saying that it was inspiring to their kids and so on, and that's one of the things I think we do is get people involved in technology, and then that spreads out over a wide range of things. And then the data itself is interesting.
Read more and share this interview with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive and click Share with Friends.